You're listening to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. Welcome to the third episode of the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. And I'm here with a bunch of clowns, other co-hosts, to give you the third installment of the insights and some results and news, and also some of our predictions for the year. So I'm Chris Young, and just to introduce the other members of the cast, we also have...
Rich here again. Happy New Year, everyone.
And Toby, Happy New Year.
James, Happy New Year.
And Pat, Happy New Year.
That sounded like the least encouraging and happy New Year's ever.
I didn't wish everyone a Happy New Year. I'm hoping everyone rolls ones and I can finally do well. So here we have the third episode here. So what we'll do is we'll just run into some news. So the first bit of news, which you might have spotted if you keep in touch with the War Machine and Hordes UK Facebook forums, is we have a lovely new model coming out. Through the Black Industries something, which is the Hooch Hauler. So what are our thoughts on the Hooch Hauler, guys?
We're leading with this.
We are. Let's just get into it. In fact, James, you are our resident Trolls player, so what are your thoughts? Is it a pretty model? Let's go with that first.
I mean, yes, it's pretty, but Maybe I'm just too old now, and the first thing I do when I look at a model is I say, how am I going to transport this? And it is just, it's untransportable. Even if it was a normally priced model, I'd be sitting there going, how am I going to move this around?
Is your agent not ever able to arrange some transportation for you?
He only deals with my online, like, social, like, you know, network
social
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm on my own for gaming. I just, like... The problem, right, you have to understand from a troll player's perspective, even if it wasn't as expensive as it is a battle engine that's middling, that's usable in one theme out of four, and it's probably not going to be allowed in any of the other themes at any time in the near future. It's just not a good investment.
Is it restricted from other themes?
Yes, it's only allowed in one theme, as is that other battle engine, which is only allowed in one theme.
So you mentioned the price there. Just how much is it, out of curiosity?
So, if you were to use import, you have to pay VAT on top of it, and you might get charged a fee for it if it's not declared at point, which it won't be. So, you're probably looking at somewhere around $200.
200 quid, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. They're close to one-to-one, aren't they, at the moment? Anyway, dollars to pounds, it's because we have Brexit.
So, like, everything that James said, but also, it's just stupidly big. Like, there's... Why have they made it so massive? I don't understand it. Just beggars belief. Like, it's quite a cool concept, but like, it is just a load of barrels stuck together. Oh dear. Anyway.
Go ahead.
It's just in the last year, like in the last 18 months, you have to understand. Let's look at the last 2 years. We've had the Glacier King get released, and everyone bought it because it was really good and we could put snipe on it. And then at the change in Mark III, suddenly everyone was buying a Mountain King. And then they made the battle engine good. And then they made the Sea King good. And then they've released another battle engine. Like, that's five huge bases in 2 years that you wouldn't have owned any of before unless you were a snowflake and wanted a Mountain King. Like, it's ridiculous.
Just to confirm, you are complaining that Privateer Press made all your big models better.
Well, yeah, because they could have made, like, some of the small bases better. Like, all the stuff I've got that they could transport around. Like, it's what it is, but like, it's just, you can't transport any of that stuff, and it just takes up a lot of space.
Is it any good though, in terms of, like, with, you've got some really strong options? There's obviously Maddie 1, Walker 2, Colgrimmer, you've got the Bears, you've got all sorts of stuff at the minute, all the new toys. Is it, like, does it have a space? Is it going to dethrone any of the troll leaders at the minute? Like, are you using it and building it in lists?
No.
No, not really. Like the thing is, like what are you playing in that theme? What are you playing in the Northkin theme? Probably one of your best answers is Colgrimmer, and Colgrimmer's got a cloud wall. And what can you see through a cloud wall? a fucking big battle engine.
It is very big.
It is a really weird model, so, right? It's very unusual for trolls. It doesn't fit in many lists right now, but it could be really good if you can find the right list for it.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's definitely not like a complete turd. I'm just like, why am I going to try it when I'm definitely not going to buy it?
I didn't track the COD things, but does it still have the all the firework? Is it like got gourds similar to the thingamabobs?
So it's got the oil rule. So it's got oil. It's got 2 10-inch sprays. It's got like a 8-inch, 4-inch pie plate. So, but you could do some kind of cute stuff. I just don't think it's very good. So you can oil something and then get your North Korean raiders to shoot it, and you get boosted damage. But there's nothing you can't do that you can't do with Croak raiders, which are probably better. And that giant base.
So,
is it additional die or boosted?
It's boosted. So it doesn't. It doesn't even combo with stuff like Horgul or.
Yeah, it's a bit frustrating.
It's all right. And if it was like £100, if it was like the War Wagon, then I think people would buy it. But I just don't understand why you'd pay £200 for it when you could.
But does this actually show, on the flip side, and more potentially commercially for PP, why they've done BHI? Because you've got a model that some people may like, and that could be cool, that might be good in the future. It doesn't sound like it's going to be rushing off the shelves day one. So for them as a supplier, producer and supplier, actually trying to distribute that through a supply chain and get shops to order versions of it is really tricky, right? So actually keeping logistics centrally kind of works, doesn't work commercially from a consumer point of view at the minute, but you can see the sense in what they're trying to do, yeah?
Is that the question, just to take it slightly off the hooch holder, but because we've three models now that we've seen they're going to come through, we've got the Dracodile, we're going to get Scar through it, and obviously the Hooch Hauler. Am I missing any?
That's what we've seen so far. Yeah.
That's all we've seen. So obviously only Krix players will get the... although normally you'll only get one or two things for one faction. But is that kind of the way they see it now? Is that, are we not seeing this massive cost due to, like we mentioned, Brexit and things like that? You know, if they're having to export these things around the world and the costs behind it, the distribution costs and all this kind of stuff, is that why they're doing it? Because if they're wanting to make these big models, they're only going to sell to a few, relatively small percentage of their customer base, which isn't, to be honest, a massive customer base anyway. It's not, War Machine's great and it's popular, but it's not like the Games Workshop side of things where they know they're going to sell X many thousands. So, I mean, do you think, as bad as it is for us, do you think that's why they're doing it and you can understand it? Or do you think this is actually going to harm it a bit more?
I think it's more harmful than they're gonna. I think they're gonna regret it. I think as soon as, like, if you look at like the Forge World and the stuff that they produce, it's all very kind of like not niche things, but they're not definitely required to play. So it's all kind of like the super cool giant stuff. Whereas they're releasing, as soon as they release a caster, who's only the only option to buy them is through mail order direct from them, and it's going to cost you a couple of £100. I think that's really, really quite a poor choice, because it's just going to alienate people. What you don't want to be is kind of have people unable to buy your product because they're priced out. And as soon as you're kind of breaking through things costing over £100, I think it really, really gets quite, psychologically, for lots of people, they're just kind of out, just like, that's cost me too much. I think that's what will happen, personally.
And I think that's the thing, like, I think they're lucky in a regard that it's a bit of a meh model, because like it's not going to be a problem if most of us don't buy it. But if
because like your answer to Krix or something, you'd everyone be pay to win, blah blah blah. This is a tax just to players, troll players or something.
Well, yeah. Imagine if it was as good as like the Grimkin battle engine or the Signar battle engine. You'd be like, oh my god, what the hell? But as it is, you're just like, well, I just won't buy it, and it'll be fine.
I bet they're regretting not making the Derp Turtles direct order.
You're not really killing.
They are stupid.
They'd be like Derp Turtle smugglers. You kind of, try and strap them to their waist and come through customs and all sorts of shit. It'd be amazing.
Do you think, just with you mentioning Forge Worlds, I mean, obviously, we here in England are pretty, I'll probably say pretty spoiled. The fact that, we can just go to Nottingham if we want. We get there. We don't have to pay these exorbitant postage costs. Forge World is never cheap. Never has been. Probably never will be. But now we're seeing kind of the equivalent from an American company, which if we were in America, this would be fine. You know, you could order these Bahi models at any point, and you can, you know, get them delivered to you free at the start, and it's not an issue. It's really going to be the big issue for outside of America once you can't get that free delivery, and we're having to pay the import taxes, and we're having to pay handling, which is all our own sort of devices, really. It's our own government that's doing it. So is it just that this is an American company, not an English company?
I think so, and I think that sums up like what I hope and think. Prior to the first thing I do this year is that is figure out how to engage with the European markets a bit better. I think that sentiment's been expressed in a couple of different ways, and different forums, different drivers, and I'm confident that they'll get it right. I think, you know, they're on the right track. They spend a lot of time in the game, and I can't believe, or you know, hopefully I'm not even saying this, but I can't believe they'll throw away half their customer base, because they've made a really good game, and there's lots in store for 2018.
Yeah, definitely agree. I just wanted to chime in when you mentioned Forge World, Chris. My understanding is definitely this is related to problems with the UK, right, and our currency. It affects Europe as well. But I know guys who play Games Workshop games in the US have really benefited from cheap Games Workshop, cheap Forge World. One of the reasons that Games Workshop bounced back really quickly, it was actually bouncing back financially before 8th edition 40K, because their products were so cheap. And if you're in the US, you were able to buy direct from Forge World and save a lot of money. So we're having the reverse problem over here.
I guess that's good, because I think there's a lot of anger directed at PP, so it's certainly they're not going to be able to affect any of our current economic woes as much as the next guy's fashion government. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Right then. Well, unless anyone's got any additional points on that, we've had our little join in with the UK moaning. And unfortunately, at the moment, I'm fine, being that I play Grimkin, so I don't think there'll be any Grimkin stuff on there at the moment, so I can just sit from afar. As soon as they bring the Pumpkin King Colossal out on there, I will cry, and then I'll have to, you know, sell my wife or something to buy it. I'm not sure. We can sort it out at the time. So, or Marshmallow Man or something like that. Right, so what we'll do is we'll just go into the events that ran and then the events coming up. So we've had an event which was yesterday, I believe, which is the Power Fist event. So this is one of the events which feeds into a regional.
Today.
So the four players have qualified. It was a four-round event. So the winner was John. Oh, it was today. Sorry, I apologize. It was John Clark took it away. We had second was Chris Clare, third Rob McCormick, and fourth Martin Fornival. So although obviously wins that, all four of them will be going into a regional final.
That's going to be one of those tough regionals as well. Like the Midland guys have really done a lot over the last year. Between there's Power Fist, there's Walsall, there's Central Birmingham, and then you've got the Northants guys as well. So, yeah, it's turning into quite a tough matter, that Midlands pool.
Indeed. And I think that's kind of this is like a good example, I believe, of what we're looking at going forward, is that now that, you know, we're getting to let people know about the Power Fist events, and then, as you said, it's, you know, a good meta, and it's a good, you know, it's a good tough meta to go to, so people will now be aware of it, and hopefully we can get people going to those events in the future, even outside of Super Series. So it's kind of, you know, just keeping people aware of what's going on.
Yeah, they had just on that, if you look at that group, they're around for like last couple of years. They've been around for ages actually, and James will know more, but from an outsider's point of view, they spent, certainly had a big push for a year, like traveling and things. They spent a lot of time going down to like Wales and Bristol, played with, you know, Ryan Evans, not a big lot, and Terry and all the Firestorm lot, and Terry and Martin down there. They smashed head into those matters, and then a year later, they're starting to kind of wreak havoc on those and, you know, challenge some of the big dogs down there, as well as strengthening their own pool of talent at Midlands as well. So it shows you, you know, if you want to get better at the game, then certainly have a think about getting out of your meta, things from traveling, and bring back what you've learned to smash the locals at your tables.
Okay, right. So events coming up. So we have in London, Cross Gaming on the 13th. We also have in the Southwest, we have BIG or Big on the 13th. It's the Saturday on the 14th in northeast. We have Huddersfield qualifier in the northwest at the War Games Store on the 20th, and then finally the Midlands Northampton on the 12th of February. Now I know that some of these events are possibly sold out currently. I know the War Games Store one Rich is running is, but if you go to our website, you can see where these are being held, you can see the future qualifiers, you can get in touch with the people organizing, they're all on the website. So if we have any drops or any issues like that, you can get in there and try and get yourself qualifying to get to those finals. Is there anything that anyone wants to add on any events they're in touch with or elaborate on any of those?
Yeah, I'd just say that, like, if you are kind of curious or interested in attending one of the qualifiers, one of the events, just jump on kind of the Facebook page or go to the website and track down the organisers, because even if it's an event is sold out, so the London event is sold out, just get in contact with us and we can put you on the drop list, because we've had a couple this week, so that list, although it was kind of like 7 or 8 people, has slimmed right down. So even if an event's sold out, you should always kind of declare your interest, because it might be that a ticket becomes available. Kind of, you know, life has a way of getting in the way of kind of events, and so people often drop out.
For some reason, people don't prioritize toys. I never understand it, but it's the way it is. Just to confirm as well, we mentioned the website. That is wmhukiss.co.uk. You can see all the qualifiers, all the players. We're updating the qualified players on there. So we'll keep the details up on there as they go. So if you want any information, go through there, go through the Facebook page. And we've got Twitter as well, which is all that wmhukiss.
I think everyone was desperately trying to do overtime so they could afford a Black Industries model.
Probably. It's the Marshmallow Man King coming, you see. They're all preparing. Right, so some of you may think, you know, what, this Pat, he's come on, he's a bit quiet, you know, which is strange for Pat. If anyone's met him, you know, you talk to him about something, he just doesn't show up.
That's me.
So there's a reason we've got on you here, Pat and Rich as well. So I believe there is something going on in Poland next year. Isn't it sort of like a Thumb Wars or something like that?
Yeah, there's a little local event called the WTC. This is going on in the shed in Poland somewhere. So just to try and big it up, because it's really struggled over the last couple of years. Only had, what, 360 players last year, was it? 320 plus support and stuff. It is huge. It's the WTC. It's one of the biggest events in the calendar. And trying to get Pat on, because Pat has been, we're certainly at the forefront of, international machine, Pat, current reigning world champion, right?
That's right, yep.
So, I think we've got in the UK, specifically England as well, but all the other regions, Ireland, Wales and Scotland have also got their own OTC teams and things being put together. We've got a deadline for player applications kind of coming up under January. We've got some invitationals running in Feb. This is from the WTC committee who set this up. So really, you know, that's when people are looking at 2018, think about what they want to do with the game, what they want to achieve. For some of you listening, you may have thought about applying to the WTC. So we want to have a general conversation on the state of the English meta, so to speak, and get some insight from Pat as a player and captain, and also as a solo competitor who's then also added WTC to his roster. About the what it's like joining and give you guys some insights, because some people out there might think about applying, and hopefully will do off the back of this podcast. So I think, start with Pat, can you give us a rundown of the WTC, not so much mechanics, but you know, from your journey first time through to last year as captaining the England Lions team, like, what's it about, what makes it good, you know, what are the things that kind of stick in your mind about WTC?
Yeah, I'd love to. Big question, but wow. So I guess I've been doing WTC now with Team Ireland and more recently Team England for 4 or 5 years. And every time it's got bigger and better. What appealed to me originally about it was the chance to go abroad and play War Machine. When I first joined Irish WTC team, it was also for Poland. And I'd never played outside of Ireland before. And I was so excited to go and meet all these new people and figure out exactly how good our meta was, as in our Irish meta was, compared to the rest of the world. Turns out we were okay. We did all right. But it was amazing to see a lot of people who I'd read articles by or listened to on podcasts, to meet all them in person and get to know them. It was amazing to see a lot of new people and to learn about all these different metas from all over the world, right? And how they all play War Machine and how they all love War Machine. So it was a really fun, really sociable event. In Poland, I think it was especially sociable, so we have that to look forward to again this year.
Big fun, big fun.
Yeah. I won't go into reasons why, I can get into that in a bit.
Okay. Maybe some stories from the Irish team in Poland.
But yeah, so I went and I was not disappointed. It was great. Everyone I met was amazing. Really, really fun. And I think the main thing that stands out for me about the WTC over any of the other events I've been to is it's the most international. It's the one event where you will have people from all over the world under one roof, all hanging out and playing War Machine together. We get a little taste of that at cons. So for example, in the UK, the most international event we have is probably SmogCon, where in years past you had groups of people from all over Europe would attend. We had a lot of Germans, Italians, Swedes, Norwegians, so on and so forth. And ETC often had a couple of non-UK teams as well. But aside from those two, you don't see a lot of non-UK players, I think it's fair to say, events. And WTC is completely different to any other con anywhere else in the world because it's the one place where everyone comes together to play and you get such an amazing community atmosphere as a result. So that's the main reason I'd recommend it.
Yeah, I've heard it described as like it's just this big family that you just don't get to see very often. But once you've gone 1 year and accepted into the family, like, you know, every con event, you know, even on Facebook, you know, just between travels, etc., you've got this big extended family who are always happy to see you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing I noticed is after going to WTC, I started to go to more and more cons outside of Ireland. And I started to recognize more and more people because I'd met them at WTC and I saw them in their respective countries or wherever it was. And after about a year or so of going around Europe playing conventions, I had so many friends in so many parts of the world.
Oh, amazing, yeah. Yeah. So one of the big things about WTC is obviously it's the competitive side of it. It's arguably the world's toughest tournament. It's designed to bring together the world's best players in a team format, you know, which will also help eliminate some of those kind of dice rolls that can happen on one game because you're playing to best of three out of five games for each round. And there's a lot of prestige with it. So teams are trying to, you know, put out their best players and take it down. Obviously, the German team last year, they've been trying to take that tournament down for about 3 or 4 years with the same guys. I think they've all breathed a huge sigh of relief, especially when I didn't dice them. But anyway. but yeah, one of the things, and I guess you've got a really unique and interesting perspective on this, is for people looking at this, it might feel like, you know, we play locally, we play, you know, like today, Power Fist's local Steamroller. You know, there's a big difference between that and the WTC stage. Now, you've seen the Irish meta, you've seen the English meta, you've seen kind of the best players through your international career. So from what you know about inwardly looking at the English meta and the UKI meta, and outwardly looking at kind of the international scene, where do we stack up at the minute? Like, how do you feel about kind of our competitive bench?
I think Team England, well, we did amazing last year, right? We had one of, I'm not going to say the best performance because Team England consistently does very well. But for the first time, we had two teams in the semi-finals.
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
A real achievement. And I think we're the first country to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. I think we are.
Is that right? That was the first time that two countries have put someone
in? Oh, no, I'm sorry. We had Australia the year before. Rats.
Boo. That's the first Northern Hemisphere team. We'll go take a leaf out of the rugby players' books. First Northern Hemisphere team.
To be honest, yeah. Probably others.
Nice, nice.
But certainly, it was the first time that the UK had done that. And I think that showed that not only are we one of the stronger teams in WTC right now, but we have a pretty deep bench with a lot of potential players who could be strong. But not only was that true of the team we had last year, but my experience now playing in the UK for the last 18 months or so is that we have a lot of really fantastic players who haven't yet started participating in WTC. And I think now is an excellent time for them to really think about going.
I was going to say, Pat, like, if you look at those, the Knights team and the Lions team, if you look at the kind of the people who had been before, there's actually only, you know, I think three or four guys from both of those teams, across both of those teams, who had been before. So, like, there's six or seven new people who'd come to the England setup and kind of done phenomenally well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of raise that point a bit more from you guys' perspective, and I mean, it's not, and in a way, I'm trying not to be disrespectful, but it's the way it kind of comes across, is that each year you get two teams, and everyone gets two teams. You then have to apply based on the size of your nation, the amount of people playing, the previous results for a third team. So people, you always hear people refer to each team as the first, second, and third team and things like that. But one of the things that I would really want to raise for you guys that are listening, that the supposed third team, which is the team which, if we couldn't have secured, you know, a third slot, that wouldn't have gone, they were actually one of the teams in the semi-finals alongside Pat and Rich's team. So, you know, these are the people who probably didn't, you know, when they're doing it, so you have people like Norbert in there who'd never been before, as you mentioned. You had all these people that had never been before, probably went along just kind of going, you know what, we're just going to go to see how well we do. And actually, it turns out, do pretty damn well. So, I mean, if you're out there thinking, oh, you know, I'd never apply because they're so good caliber, it just goes to show you that our supposed third team with the bunny ears, I know, great podcasting, you can't see it, actually got to the semi-finals. So,
yeah, it's really big. And I think that reflects that we do have a really deep bench, which is, I think, something to mention, because, I mean, last year was my first year, and I'll talk about kind of what I took away from it, but certainly from a team captain and Toby as well, because obviously you've been to WTC before. You know, what for people who are looking at this, like, what does it do to your game if you're a player who's doing well locally, doing well on national scale as well, and applying, get onto WTC team, or you're involved in that process? Like, what can you expect? You know, is it something's going to improve your game, and if so, how?
No, definitely. I think like with anything, you know, the better the caliber of people you're playing with and you're kind of talking with and you're kind of dojoing with and theorizing with, then it's going to up your game. But I thought it was fantastic. I think it really improved my game. It kind of enabled me to think about, you know, how I was playing and, you know, the things I was doing and the choices I was making. But also, I think I'd just echo what Pat was saying. Like, you do just kind of form these friendships with the rest of the guys on your team and the kind of the guys in the squad. And I think it's the real kind of boon, actually, getting the opportunity to kind of just go and play. Because when I went, I kind of went, tried it out, wasn't really expecting anything, and then was very lucky to have got on a team. And I think it's really, really, really important for people who are curious or who are kind of thinking, who may be on the fence about should they go, shouldn't they go. I think if you have the opportunity to go and try out, you definitely should. Because you'll go and get some really good games in, and you'll meet some, you know, nice blokes. And if you get on, fantastic. And if you don't, then you'll learn a lot. So I think you don't really lose anything from going to one of the kind of selection days or trying to kind of qualify.
That was something, I mean, you mentioned that, which is really, I think, really important as well. If you think you're applying, like, a lot of people have said what you just mentioned, like, they went along and had a go and didn't really expect much. And I think, yeah, last year, obviously, we were very fortunate to have Pat as a captain. Fantastic player credentials speak for themselves. We had some great players on the team as well. But myself and Paul, it was our first time. And you kind of, you put your application in and then you end up on the team and you kind of think, like, well, yeah, I'll put the work in. I'll do what I can to, you know, along the rest of the guys. And all of a sudden, you're not just playing against the best in the world, but actually you've got games into them. And you can't get that bench on. You can't realise how good you are or how good the UK or the team is until you go and, you know, set yourself against some of the other best teams in the world. And I think everyone came away from that tournament thinking, do you know what, actually, yeah, we compete with these guys. And a lot of the people who applied probably thought, I'll give it a go, you know, and ended up beating some of the best players in the world.
Yeah, definitely agree. I think one of the big appeals to make the move, I guess, from national play to international should be that you can benchmark yourself as a player and say, okay, how well do I stack up? Because maybe I'm winning local steamrollers and I do well at, like, big events like UK Nationals. But one of the weird things about the UK scene, I think, compared to some, is we have some really huge tournaments, which I don't think they have so many of in most other places that play War Machine. Like, in America, you have cons, and in the rest of Europe, the events seem to be smaller. But what I want to raise is when you have things like UK Nationals, Welsh Masters, Blood and Oil, you have so many people playing that in some ways it can be hard to know exactly how good you are, because the more people that are playing, the more that element of randomness is thrown in, right?
Yeah, more rounds as well, more dice.
Exactly. So you might have a good day and go X and one. You might have a bad day and go X and two. And maybe you think, oh, I'm a great player and I didn't do very well. Maybe you think, I'm a rubbish player, but I got lucky. Oh. Whatever it might be. Once you start meeting people from different metas and start figuring out how they play the game, you can much more accurately figure out as well, how good am I? And what do I need to do to get better?
Unless you're Michael Dick and then just, you know, you hide from me. Because, you know, as we mentioned last podcast, you know, I'm undefeated against Mike. And he's obviously just been, he's been hiding in the top tables from me ever since. So, you know,
hiding in the top tables.
It's all right, Mike. If you just have to win so that we don't have to play, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
Come down to my level and talk to me, I dare you.
Exactly. I'm not sure he'll get a bad back, unfortunately.
I think probably last bit to mention on WTC. So if I can't share how I found as a player, and then Pat, if you try as a captain, and Toby as well, playing it. I think when I played, one of the things I was nervous about was, am I going to be able to have enough time for this? And yeah, is it going to be super serious? Is it going to kill this game for me? Am I going to go from loving this game to just hating it because it's turned into like a part-time job? You're expected to put the reps in with your lists and practice, and actually I found it was the same amount of games I was playing normally. So getting in like, you know, a couple of practice nights a week, you know, steamrollers, things like that, occasional vassal. But actually it was really, the team was really supportive. And you find like every night you'd get home, and if you open a messenger, there'd be some people in the team having a chat about a matchup or a game and talking through strats or not, you know, and what they need to do in certain matchups and things, which was amazing. And actually you find yourself really getting into it. It's really engrossing in a really, really positive way. I never once felt like, oh my God, I hate this. You know, this is it. You are practicing similar lists for probably 3 or 4 months. So yeah, I think most people afterwards kind of take a bit of a break on it, but that's not at all to say. So in terms of the lists I'm playing, I might play without other stuff, but actually, yeah, really honing your craft for a couple of months with the tools you've chosen, that was really enjoyable. And I know that's something that people ask me, like, well, you know, if I can only get 2 or 3 games in a week, as long as you're getting quality games in, as long as you're engaging with the team, there's a lot of support around it. And yeah, it's really good for you as a player. And I think it's a really fun process to be a part of. It's not the grind that's kind of been portrayed that some people are worried about. For your guys' point of view, how did you find preparing as a player and Pat as a captain, being through a couple of times, like that kind of 6 months running up to WTC? Yeah, how did you feel when you're in that process?
Again, I thought it was really enjoyable. So when I was selected, we kind of traditionally the WTC teams will go to the ETC as like your team to try out and practice. And we had a kind of couple of kind of traveling practice days and obviously a WhatsApp group. But I thought it was just really fun. It was a really, really good bunch of guys that I was playing with, some good conversations, and you just went and played. Do you know what I mean? And it's not all about kind of winning. It's about kind of practicing and learning your lists. And I think you just get a better understanding of the game, but kind of you're doing it with other people. So whereas it's kind of, it doesn't feel laborious, it feels quite interesting. And when you find something out, or when you tweak something or you test something, and you can kind of have a conversation with the other guys and kind of bring that to the table. I thought it was just a really fun process. Quite tiring, you know, towards the end, but incredibly rewarding at the same time.
Yeah, definitely agree. I think as a team event, the way that teams bond and also the way that they can create an advantage for themselves is by that process in the run-up before the event. Once you start playing, there's teamwork that can be done in preparing for games, but you're very much on your own on the table. You can't talk, you can't give people advice. But where your teammates help you is in helping you prepare days, weeks, or months ahead of time. And that is really fun. It doesn't have to be stressful, but the more frequently you do it, the more helpful it is. And the best way to do that is to make it just casual and interesting. And like Toby said, if you make it fun and engaging and just always chatting about the game and always thinking about it, then the team is going to bond and you're going to learn a lot and you're going to do better as a result.
Sweet. So applications are in end of the month, I think, for the UK, or sorry, for England. And we'll post up some details as well. There, we've already had some really strong players come in, and a lot of them, similar to last year, got some really good new names coming through. And there are certainly some players out there who I think have got really good shout if they throw a name now. We've got some really strong players in the UK. I think Wales have got their WTC sorted. So they've made announcements. I think Scotland and Ireland, I'm not sure exactly where they're up to in the process. We'll be having those guys on the podcast certainly over this year, but I'll see if we get any information about their process as well. But yeah, looking forward to getting some applications in and putting together the winning WTC team this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, just the final point there is, if you're there and you're umming and ahhing, I would definitely put in an application. Just one of the conversations we were having off air prior to the podcast was about last year. So I was part of the committee last year that was selecting, and obviously Pat was one of the captains, so he was assisted with the selection. And there were certain people who you thought you would have got an application from. Now, obviously, there could be, you know, other reasons out there, but I think what we want to make sure is that if, you know, we get everyone applying, and therefore we can make the sort of the best selections possible, or Rich can in this case, I'll pass the baton across. Just, you know, have faith in yourself. And at worst, if you come along to things like selection days and stuff like that, you can play against these people, and you can actually see, you know, again, how well you do into these other people, and you can show off your skill at the game. So
mad skills. Yeah.
Mad skills, or in the case of, you know, Rich, you could show how you could play a perfectly tactical turn, but then just not roll anything while everyone's watching. That was a very entertaining selection day, Rich. Very entertaining to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is WCC been there pimped royally. So what we'll do is we'll just go on to the topic of the podcast. So we've got two little bits for each of us. Hopefully we'll get a bit more sort of content and stuff once all the events are in full swing. So for this one, we're going to have a bit of a prediction. So this could be about the meta, factions, things like that. And we're just going to go through each person and say what your predictions are for the year in War Machine. So does anyone want to go first, or am I going to have to choose names?
I can go first.
Oh, good one, James.
Everyone buys the Hoot Crawler.
No. I reckon Scorn are going to win a 128-man event in the next year in the UK.
Ooh, big words. Any particular caster you're thinking, or just in general, you think there's the faction's now got the chops to do what it needs to?
I think that's the strength of the faction. I think they're top four with Grimkin, Krix, and Signar, and I think that they have a lot of variety. They can play a lot of different kind of lists. They can play gun lines, they can play police bricks, they can play infantry spam with the Zarls. It's just, all of it's good, and I just think they're really good, well set up for the meta, and I think they'll do well.
We can now play Dracodars as well with our theme.
Do you reckon they'll nerf the turtle?
I mean, not soon enough. They'll nerf something that was really strong 6 months ago because it's in America.
I think if the turtle gets nerfed, it'll be next year when there's a Scorn army in CID.
Yeah, and the thing is turtles are really good, probably because some of the builds. I've seen most Scorn players who are playing competitive lists will have one list with two of them in, and they are really good. The thing that people haven't seen about Scorn is that if you took the turtles away, it's not like Convergence, they're probably quite reliant on the taps. I think they're fairly cool. Maybe not so much this year, but the taps are pretty cool. If you took turtles away from Scorn, there's still a hell of a lot in that faction that can come out the gates and is really powerful.
Yeah, they have a deep bench of good casters, and they have a lot of variety in beasts and units, I agree.
Cool, and then Pat, carry on. What do you reckon your prediction for the year is?
So that's tough, because War Machine, now that we have CID and we have these big new releases every month or 2 months, the meta changes really fast. And I think in Mark III, we've seen the meta just massively change over the last couple of years, right? Has it even been 2 years yet? No.
No, not yet. Mm-hmm.
That'd be two years in June, really, won't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So over the last 18 months, the meta shifted so many times that I can't really make a prediction for the year. I think we'll see a resurgence in Legion, who I think are a little bit underestimated right now, and with their CID should go from having like one really good list to having a really good pair. I think It will be interesting to see exactly where Cricks land, and if they'll continue to be a boogeyman, or if we can just handle them. But depending on that, will really influence what a lot of the other factions do. And that, I think, is just up to the release of Crucible Guard at Lock and Load. Beyond that, who knows what will happen.
Okay, I'll do my prediction because it kind of feeds on a bit of, on the back of that one. My prediction is that as long as everything keeps going the way it's going, I think that we're going the so-called whiners of War Machine, the people that constantly complain, are going to have a harder and harder time as the year progresses. Because we have our personal chat and in other chats and things like that, where people will constantly be like, "Oh, my faction's not very good. My faction's not very good," and so on and so forth. I really think that the way the War Machine's going, everything is so close to the that sort of middle point, and that some things are slightly better, some things are slightly worse, but it's as you said, it's a constantly cycling meta. So I actually think that, so probably about 15% less whining, if we had to measure it quantitatively. exactly. If we were to gag, Rich, then that would mean 20% less whining on the podcast. from last year, and I don't know whether it was just my exposure to the events or the way that Mark III has been going, but there's been so many debates where previously everyone would be like, "I just can't do this, I just can't win it." Like, for example, Kador and things like that, where just struggling into certain lists and things like and those kind of things. But everything is just, certain factions have problems with other certain factions. But it's now really sort of specific, like, the whole Circle has an issue into Kador has an issue into Cricks. But it's not just Kador has an issue into everything, and Cricks especially with some of the nerfs coming up, they're going to not be able to just, hopefully stomp as they have been, and then the bottom. Everyone, seriously, when I see minions across the table now, I'm genuinely scared. That is showing you how good the meta is now, and I think that's going to be how it continues to progress. So that's my thoughts.
Do you think the bell curve is going to narrow?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think it has been narrowing for the last, since the end of Mark II, but all the way through Mark III, it's got better and better and better. And the game now is in a very good, very balanced state, where the difference between the top and bottom factions is not much.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Legion was the one, wasn't it? You mentioned that everyone says kind of Legion at the bottom, and I agree with you. I think they're kind of the sleeper hit. Certainly, depending on what comes out of COD, I could really expect to see those come back as well. Hellmouth are coming back. So I think, we've got in COD, I think they've got arguably the top and the bottom, right? They've got Cricks and Legion stepping up first. So I think that bell curve will continue to narrow. I think the meta with themes, with the releases, with COD, with new factions, and at some point this year we'll probably have a new scenario pack, so maybe some of the really fast scenarios, notably like Spread, that will drop. So I think for me all this is pointing towards a meta that is changing quite fast. So I can't see us this year getting to like a end of Mark II, here are the list that you play if you want to win. And I think for 2018 we're going to see the players doing consistently well, the ones who kind of learn a faction and get better at playing kind of some balanced lists with some tech pieces. So I think all but the really extreme skews will go away. As people realise they need a toolbox and more games are decided on the table as opposed to list chicken. And I think that's going to show the strength of the game and the strength of balance. So that's what I'm looking forward to. So less skews, more balance across the game, more balanced lists, more games on the table.
Toby, what are your thoughts?
I think I echo what the other guys have said, really. I think in terms of the kind of the balance between the factions, I think all the factions have got good pieces. I think what will happen with the SID and as the kind of CID goes on further is that there'll be more options within the factions. Because even the factions that are kind of considered on the bottom end of the spectrum have got good pieces. They just have less good pieces. And I think part of the problem is they're a bit more narrow in the kind of things that you can play. My prediction is I think we will see from PP, I think they're going to start doing terrain. I think the move towards having certain types of terrain in the direction in the scenario packet, I'd like them to release a terrain pack, and that's my prediction.
So is that specific or more rules than we have currently? So things that whereby the terrain affects the table in more dynamic ways?
Not necessarily kind of more dynamic ways, but I think they'll introduce maybe a few more of the pieces, so like the fire terrain, kind of the toxic, the corrosion stuff. There's other things they could play around with there that are quite interesting, and they do kind of vary up the game. But I was more thinking that they're going to produce actual, you know, 2D or 3D terrain.
The trenches.
Yeah, exactly. They would follow that up a bit more. So I think that's quite interesting, and it makes things more accessible. It makes things more in keeping. So when you go between different metas or different countries, kind of thing, it's more standardized in terms of kind of how you're playing. Because you can go some places and they've got like 2 foot by 2 foot forests, and actually the game is played much better when people have, you know, smaller terrain kind of thing.
Here's a crazy thought, just building off Tobio's idea, and I'm just taking over because I'm the host and I could do that. But who would you think, you know, we went through the CID for the pack to select the way that terrain is placed on the board. What do you think if in 2018 they were to put up a list of terrain, so for example, 2 trench templates, 2 forest templates, a wall, you know, that kind of thing. They gave you a list of 8, like a random list, and you rolled for what terrain was to go on the table. And then that was the terrain.
Yeah, no, I think you could do it easier. You could just roll 2d6, and it gives you a combination of 8 pieces of terrain, or 7 or 9.
Yeah, or something like that. So basically, it's a case of they can turn around and say, "We want 8 pieces of terrain on the board." In some way, this is how you select, so that it's not all exactly the same every time you play. Do you think they would move that way?
I'm not sure. I think. The reason being is for TOs, like, if they're specifying terrain, that's why I wouldn't be surprised if they do start releasing their own brand terrain packs, because for TOs to kind of set that up, it's one of those things where I'd be like, well, you know, if everyone rolled a 6, or if, you know, half the tables rolled a 6, and I needed, you know, however many, I need 14 trenches or whatever, I don't have that. Yeah, there's only 1 per table, that type of thing. So I think for a lot of certainly smaller clubs, it would just be that. It might be an issue for them. So I can't see them mandating it in the pack.
I'd like to see terrain setups and say, like, these are 10 setups of different, like, setups we can have on a table. But say, like, obviously, if you haven't got the thing to this table, you could ignore it for your tournament, fair enough. But if you've got the stuff, these are, like, 10 setups, and you've got different terrain that you can play on. You can start to develop strategies for individual terrain setups, if that makes sense.
So, like, so this is some preset terrain. So, here's a list of potential battlefields I'm playing on.
Absolutely. And I don't know how if it would make the game too formulaic, or it wouldn't, but I'd like to give it a try.
I think actually that, without noticing, most tables seem very similar anyway. Like, you know, I think, you know, people would say, oh no, because that would be too restrictive, because then we'd only be playing on X tables. I think if you were to go around and look at the setup of most tables, I think they all follow, you know, certain rules, and actually are quite similar. So I think I don't think it's too much of a jump to look at kind of having pre. I mean, there are ways in which you could do it. You could say roughly do this, and then you can shift things by an inch or two. And also you can group the terrains, so you can have terrain that gives, you know, defensive bonuses, terrains that is, you know, impeding terrains that's going to block line of sight. So if you don't have a forest, you can put a cloud there, or if you don't have a wall, you can put like a building there. Do you know, there's lots of things you could do around with that would quite easily work.
Well, exactly. I mean, like there was a standing joke at my club that it was always a forest or a building in the middle of the board. And one, they seemed shocked when I told them that you could use the scatter formation. You didn't have to have something in the middle, blocking line of sight in the middle of the board at the start. But secondly, no one even thought about putting a cloud there, which is totally legal because it blocks lines at line of sight. Like, people aren't thinking about it. Everyone is doing the same thing, building or forest in the middle, then let's work around it.
Yeah, we've used quite a few fog banks in the middle of the terrain, and also, but I think it's just better, because I think what you also tend to see is lots of tables with something, or all the tables have something in the middle, and then it's very few kind of tables don't have something there, and that kind of does skew it. It does give a really big advantage to some of the factions that can, you know, ghost walk or ignore terrain to some degree, which I think is maybe intentional, but I think just having a setup, you could have a little bit more control over it as a TO, but also as a player. It's another element that you can think about and plan around and kind of strategize for.
Okay, then. Well, I mean, that's a bit of a side topic. We won't continue on it. But if you listen to this, give us some feedback. Give us some ideas of how your club runs, how you set up. Are you one of the people that never uses a cloud? Have you always used a cloud? Have you found that that helps a particular faction in your area? Let us know in the comments, either on the Facebook or personally, so we can feed that out and give some get some ideas from it, because it does sound like a good idea going forward.
Just one quick thing I was going to ask, actually, for Pat. Just we talked about the knowing the bell curve, so that means there's less things that we need to tech for, so to speak. And I think that was one of the things at Star Mark 3. It's like there's all the boogeymen were about, and you couldn't build a pair that dealt with everything. Mm-hmm. One of the impacts is as you shorten the bell curve and it gets to kind of outliers, you've got a larger group of people teching for a smaller group of models / casters, list, whatever it is. So the tools are more focused. One of the models, I think, 6 months ago was claimed to be broken, and I think everyone's got a plan for, is the Gremlin Swarm. So are you noticing that people have got more plans for that than when Grimkin first came out? Have you noticed that they're losing, not losing their effectiveness, but certainly, you know, can't run the table as they potentially first did when they came out?
Absolutely. I think the vast, vast majority of my opponents have plans for Gremlin Swarms now. Some of them are better plans than others, and some lists do still struggle to deal with them. But and when I play Grimkin now, I just assume that I'm not going to keep my Gremlin Swarms alive. And I treat them just like you would any other fast solo that needs to score. Being incorporeal is a nice advantage, but it doesn't save you.
I mean, just to add on to that point, Rich, I mean, in my perspective, and I don't know if it's shared by Pat, I actually think, although the bell curve is getting smaller, I actually think it's not reducing the models. Unlike in Mark 2, where you kind of got to that point, like you said, where everyone plays one or two lists, you meet Sigdar, you know what they're playing, you know what to plan for. I for one, have no clue what someone is going to play these days, and it doesn't mean that it's going to be particularly worse or better or that kind of thing. Like, I'll come across a Legion player and I'll think, oh, well, they're obviously going to play Abbey 2, and they won't have Abbey 2 in their pairing, and they've been playing something else that's equally as good. So I actually think that the strength of Mark 3 is that people are playing all their various things, but they're still able to pull out wins with it.
Yeah, I think, no, yes, hold on. I guess we're agreeing in different ways on this. It was more the if you're going to draw kind of stuff that you've got a game into and stuff that you have to tech for, otherwise you don't have a game. I think there are less models in that category, and those are the ones that people tend to have an issue with. Like in Mark 2, you needed a Veil 2 answer, you needed a Bane's answer, you needed a Runes answer, etc., etc. And I think now people have kind of gone from, right, I just, against Grimkin, I need to be able to do a Gremlin Swarms. There's a couple of bits of cricks, but you know, if CID goes through and they're toned down a bit, there aren't kind of things where you're like, well, I have to tech for this thing or I lose. It is much more on the table and people bring more varied lists. It's more that outliers point. Gremlin Swarms are a pretty good example of that, I think. Because if you don't bring tools for them, then you're pretty done. They can just ruin your day.
Yep. I think with Denny Ghostfleet potentially nerfed in CID, there's a very short list of particular answers you need to play, and it's quite easy to cover them in a two-list pair. You start to just need to think about things like, can I hit high def? Can I crack high armor? Can I deal with infantry swarms? Which you should be able to make any pair with any faction capable of doing. Just to add to that point, where you're really players are going to shine in that kind of environment is if, like you said before, Rich, if you know your lists really well and you can play them into a variety of matchups, then you're going to do better. And you just need to know what you're facing and be able to come up with a plan, because it's not going to be about what list you have. It's going to be, how well do I know the matchup and how do I know how to play?
Going to be interesting. So I think there's a lot of people who have done very well, and not taking any away from it at all, because it's a valid skill to develop, who've got a strong list with a skew and practice into very strong matchups. And I do feel that, yeah, if you know your list well enough where you can be a bit more dynamic and like build plans on the fly and have more generic answers that you put at the table, as opposed to list answers that are almost pre-formulated, I think those players can do really well, which is great as well, because it means you should be able to play more of your faction and not feel at disadvantage. You should be able to experiment with lists and not feel like you're kind of throwing away your chance at winning an event just because you're not taking, quote-unquote, the list you should be playing.
Right then. So, our final topic for the podcast, and we'll wrap it up. So, that's what you think the meta is going to do. What are you going to do? So, we'll start with James before his agent pulls him away. What is your goal for the year, James?
I mean, last 2 years, it was, 2015 or 2016, it was to play 200 games. I did that. That was fine. It was like increasing quantity. Last year, I wanted to play a lot of games, but I wanted to increase the quality of my opponents. I think I did that again. This year, it's to do better at tournaments. Like, obviously, I'm not applying for the England team this year. I want to be in a place where I can apply for it next year. So I think it's about doing better at the big tournaments and not just dominating local metas. Sorry, guys, in the Midlands.
Okay, Pat, what's yours? Is it just, you know, smash? Does not compute, smash more.
Yeah, I would like to smash some events, that's for sure. In particular, the two that stand out for me, WTC. We came real close last year at WTC.
Yeah, we did.
Real close. We had a nail-biting semi-finals where we lost to the eventual winners. And I would love to repeat that and do just a little bit better.
Just a switch, just a little.
Yeah, because I think that's all we need to potentially be on the winning podium. So that's goal number one for sure. Goal number two for me. This year I collected a whole new army, Grimkin, painted them all up. That was exhausting. I've got no plans in regards to like collecting new armies or painting models, but I would like to go back to Lock and Load and defend my title, see how well I get on.
Rich, how about you?
So, real life is a thing this year. It's got a lot on outside of War Machine. So, I think for me, the big focus for me is to, along with you guys as part of the group, support as much as possible the community and specifically UK. So, I want to really make that a success this year and have something that kind of will help the UK scene in years to come. So, that's a big goal of mine. And alongside that, in a similar vein, kind of supporting the committee as well. So I'd love to be on a committee that helps put together and supports the winning England team this year. So that's it. I think goal-wise, outside of War Machine, I'm not going to be playing tons this year. So for me, it's about having fun. So I just want to play all the stuff that I've thought could be fun or could be cool, but yeah, didn't really have any time to try. So I want to experiment more this year. That's the plan.
Awesome. And Toby?
Well, I think if I work really hard and put in all the overtime, by the end of the year, I might be able to afford the hooch hauler. So I think that's going to be... No. In seriousness, I've kind of, like Rich was saying, there's lots of stuff, really exciting stuff going on that's non-War Machine. I'm going to have a daughter in March, which I think I've been informed may restrict my gaming time a bit. Which is super cool, but it just means I don't think I'd be able to commit to kind of playing on the WTC or anything like that, and probably quite home-based. But I want to do more stuff in terms of growing and kind of continuing to support the London scene and kind of bringing some new players through. We've moved venue from our club, so I want to kind of get some regular tournaments going there. So it's mostly just kind of about having fun and kind of playing games, but on a much more kind of casual basis, and hopefully play some games, not chained at home. But yeah, that's me really.
And for me, I resisted the urge to say snap there, Toby, because I am also having my first daughter in March.
Oh wow, well done, dude.
Something in the water.
What due date?
On the 20th.
Oof, I beat you. I'm on the 11th.
Fair enough. But yes, so I have been reliably informed by many that my life will be over, but I'm fine. It will all be okay, but it does mean that any sort of big events this year have been put on hold. So I was looking at going back, even as a commentator and stuff for WTC, but obviously that's not not on the cards this year. But my goal, other than obviously trying to keep in touch, is, as Rich said, is obviously to try and keep the Super Series a success, try and get this to be something that we continue on going forward, and that will help build all the various metas, including continuing to build my own. And for personal goal, as in War Machine, if I do get any games, my my main goal is going to stop being such a fairy when it comes to lists. One of the things I realized is that I do not play a list that often, whether it's laziness or if I've just got some OCD on the list front. I just constantly have to change it, and I think that means that I never actually learn a list. I never learn the options. I never learn the circumstances. I never get past the dice. You know, I always like a good complaint about dice. If anyone
really?
Listens to
doesn't sound like you.
Yeah, exactly. If anyone listens to Murder of Crows, they've heard my comments on dice. And even that, and I understand it, doesn't matter, I'll still complain. So that's my goal for the year. But we'll see. Obviously next year I'm hoping once the little one's a little more independent. I can bring her along and start teaching her to smash the people at the club. Shouldn't be too difficult.
10 months old.
Exactly. You know, as long as she can roll dice and go, God damn it, then we'll all be good. I've been told I can't treat my daughter as a minion. I'm not sure where the rules say that, but you know that I'm pretty sure that's like parental law, is that you treat them as a minion. So,
we'll see. We can do like top parenting tips from Toby and Chris and April.
Exactly. Right then. Well, unless anyone has anything else they want to throw onto the podcast before we wrap it up.
No, I think we're good.
We're all good.
No, we're good, mate.
I just want to say thank you very much to Pat for making some time in his schedule of smashing people continuously to come onto the podcast. So thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for James, for Agent, for letting him come see us. And thank you for Toby's wife for not doing dishes in the background while we were doing the podcast. So thank you guys for another podcast. Thank you to all for listening. If you could make sure that you sort of share and let everyone know, let the guys know at your events about the website. So it's WMHUKISS. And there's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's the website. Get in touch with us, get in touch with any of us. We love talking War Machine, hence the reason why we're on here. And we just, the whole goal of this is to make sure that you guys get better metas, get better, you know, get better events. You know, we want to stop it being these kind of little clubs that aren't connected. We want to get everyone together, and hopefully we'll live Pat's dream of, you know, winning the WTC, because just everyone's just so good. So
For sure.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and you all have a good evening and a good night. See you now.
Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Adios. Any porn's midget porn if you just called the camera further away.